This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Jay Pearson for Celeste Quinn. Celeste returns next week. It's 12:37 and 78 degrees on Friends Plaza, near our high of 80 today. We have a low pressure system over western Illinois, and it will slowly drift across the region and bring showers and thunderstorms with it. Rain and thunderstorms will be more organized through tonight and then isolated in nature over the weekend. The system's expected to push off to the east late Sunday and then Monday, and pretty much for the rest of the week, we will see an end to the rain and cooler temperatures will be coming in, too. After a high near 80 today, highs only in the upper 50s to mid-60s through next week. Some of the showers and thunderstorms, we should advise you, will have the potential to produce some heavy downpours and some lightning, small hail as possible, and strong wind gusts, but widespread severe weather is not expected with this storm system. Our forecast is for showers and thunderstorms likely this afternoon, with a high around 80 and south-southeast winds at about 10 miles an hour. Showers likely and a low around 53 tonight. And then tomorrow, a 50-50 chance of showers and thunderstorms at a high of 61. North-northwest wind, 11 to 16 miles an hour, gusting as high as 23 at times. Tomorrow night, showers likely, low around 50. Sunday, a 50-50 chance of showers and a high of 58. And then Monday, partly sunny, 58. No forecast of additional rain on Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday, either as it stands right now. The radar is showing developing showers, some of them pretty heavy, in a line from the Quad Cities over through Kankakee and down to Watseka right now. And they are moving to the north-northeast at about 15 miles an hour. And we're seeing some pop up around it, too. So as we go through the afternoon, the rain will be a little bit more widespread. Lighter rain extends all the way up to about Joliet, and some lighter rain is extending down to the east of Pontiac and into northeast McLean County right now and almost touching about the Hoopston area. The system around this moving, as I said, to the north-northeast, but it's widening in its scope as the afternoon goes on. It'll continue to do that. We have cloudy skies in Chicago, 60 degrees this hour. Bloomington is cloudy, 78. Mattoon, partly sunny, 74. Over in Lafayette, sunshine and 78. And it's 74 degrees with sunny skies in Terre Haute. At Willard Airport this hour, clouds and 71. The dew point 58, the relative humidity a rather comfortable 38%, wind is calm, and the barometric pressure at 29.72, it's falling. 77 degrees, our temperature, make that 78 now on Friends Plaza outside of Campbell Hall for public telecommunication here in Urbana at 12:41. And it's 12:41. An update on the weather right now. As I mentioned, there's the potential for some of the storms to become rather heavy, but no widespread severe weather is anticipated at this time. But in association with that storm system we were talking about, extending from the Quad Cities and especially concentrated between Kankakee and Watseka, moving to the north-northeast, there is a tornado warning issued for east-central Grundy County, west-central Kankakee County, and southwestern Will County until 1:15 this afternoon. That's because of a thunderstorm spotted on Doppler radar that's said to be capable of producing a tornado, and it right now is about 6 miles southwest of Wilmington, and that is moving to the northeast at 25. Braidwood, Coal City, Wilmington, and the Elwood and Manhattan and Rockdale areas are to be impacted by that. Other locations are being impacted by thunderstorms. And so we would advise you, if you're up in that area and listening to us, or if you're driving up Interstate 57, that's what you're headed into when you get north of Gilman right now. So do take that into account. In the deep waters off Cuba's north coast, an oil rig will be up and drilling by this fall. Geologists believe the area may contain huge deposits of undersea crude. A significant find could transform Cuba's weak economy and possibly transform relations with the United States. It would also prevent new environmental risks for the nearby Florida coast. Nick Miroff reports from Havana.
30 miles west of Havana is the port of Mariel, the town that was the departure point for more than 100,000 Cubans who left the island in the 1980 Mariel boat lift. Today it's a construction site as crews work furiously to finish new port facilities and a railway with hundreds of millions in Brazilian financing. Mariel is being remade into a servicing hub for the Cuban oil industry of the future. This fall, the Spanish company Repsol plans to start drilling 5 exploratory wells in Cuban-controlled waters at depths up to 5,000 feet, about as far down as BP's Deepwater Horizon. U.S. trade sanctions against Cuba require the rig to contain no more than 10% U.S. technology, which has slowed its completion. Built in China and owned by an Italian company, the rig is now in its final construction phase and set to depart from Singapore in June. A study by the U.S. Geological Survey estimates there are nearly 5 billion barrels of oil in the bedrock off Cuba's north coast, enough to make the island a major energy player in the region. Cuba's own geological studies show several times that amount. Ricardo Torres is a Cuban economist who tracks the energy sector.
Pudieran crearse miles de empleo productivo importante para la economía.
Thousands of jobs would be created if Cuba can go from being a net importer of energy to an oil exporting country, Torres said. Then there are the other subsidiary industries that could also arise. And even if it takes several years to bring the oil to market, he said new credit lines will open up for Cuba's cash-strapped government. What's less clear is the impact a major discovery might have on the 50-year-old U.S. trade embargo. Those sanctions will keep American companies on the sidelines, but representatives from energy-producing states have already proposed new exceptions to the embargo for U.S. oil industry firms. Mark Frank is a reporter for the Financial Times in Havana who's been covering Cuba's long search for domestic oil supplies.
Clearly, it makes the embargo less effective and adds an additional question to why that policy still exists. What's its purpose? And so one would think it would lead to more pressure towards changing that policy.
Oil companies from Malaysia, Norway, India, and several other nations have also signed exploratory drilling agreements, and Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said during a Havana visit recently that his country stands ready to help. Since the drilling will happen just 60 miles off the Florida coast, John McAuliffe of the Fund for Reconciliation and Development, a group that advocates engagement with Cuba, says it's in Washington's best interest to work with Havana on contingency plans. After all, he says the U.S. has the best cleanup technology and know-how.
The question is how you minimize the risk. And there's only one way to minimize the risk, and that is to have the kind of collaboration with Cuba that we have with Mexico or the Bahamas or any other country that is exploring for oil in a way that's potentially damaging to the U.S.
At a U.S. government conference last month in Washington on safe drilling practices, Interior Secretary Ken Salazar called Cuba's exploration plans an issue of concern that the Obama administration is watching closely. But Cuba wasn't among the dozen or so countries invited to the conference. For NPR News, I'm Nick Miroff in Havana.
Indiana is the nation's first state to bar federal Medicaid funding for abortion providers, and Planned Parenthood was squarely in legislator sights. A federal judge this week denied an injunction to keep the law from taking effect. The law has stirred up emotions in the abortion debate, and Illinois Public Radio's Michael Poetti went to hear from both sides in the declining industrial city of Gary in northwest Indiana.
When the doors opened Thursday morning at a Planned Parenthood office in Gary, Indiana, just outside of Chicago, patients who showed up were in for shock because a common payment option is no longer available. But patients did receive the customary medical documents.
Aww. Go ahead and fill those out. Top part there. The next one is front and back.
Okay.
And when you're done, bring it back to me, please, and thank you.
Okay, thank you.
But when this patient returned to the counter, the receptionist provided some new information.
We may not be able to bill
Medicaid, but we are going to take care of you. Expect situation to be resolved quickly, but we need to reschedule you. If, for any reason, you didn't qualify for the funding, we would have to reschedule you for...
But before the receptionist could explain, the patient, who asked not to be identified, didn't quite understand what was going on.
Why is that?
Governor Mitch Daniel passed the bill, and is basically saying that we can't get federal funding. And because Medicaid is federal funding, we can't accept your Medicaid here today.
What am I supposed to do now? They find somewhere else to go, huh? I don't understand it. It took me a whole month to get Medicaid in the first place, and I can't use it.
Planned Parenthood office manager Marita Torres assured the woman that she would be seen today, and Planned Parenthood would pay for the service through a special backup fund for low-income people. But those funds aren't going to last forever. In fact, they may run out this weekend. But again, that's an emergency fund. Torres says Indiana lawmakers cut Medicaid funding because they don't know all the services Planned Parenthood provides. For one, they serve a lot of men, too. She says the office sees a lot of African-American women for general health problems like hypertension.
The sad part is that they have no other places to go. We are the only medical people they see.
But Torres doesn't shy away from the fact that Planned Parenthood provides reproductive services, including alternatives to abortion, such as adoption.
We focus more on getting them on birth control, so they won't have to focus on making a decision like that. They don't like, oh yeah, you need an abortion, you know, it's here's your choices.
But not everyone in Northwest Indiana buys the argument that Planned Parenthood deserves funding. The state's Republican Governor Mitch Daniels is staunchly anti-abortion. He says he signed the legislation because most Hoosiers support it. One of those is Victor Davis, pastor at Spirit of God Fellowship Church in Gary. He says abortion is a very personal issue to him.
My mother was pregnant prior to me, and she aborted that child. And then when I came, she attempted to abort me. So it has impacted me personally in a very, very strong way.
Davis says his mother wanted to abort him because of financial pressures of having six other children. He says he and his mother shared a strong bond, and he didn't know of his situation until adulthood following her passing. Davis says abortion impacts